I'm Frank Garza, and welcome to Here and Abroad, a podcast that follows the U.S. men's national team and their player pool across Europe, MLS, or wherever else they play their club football. On today's show, we're going to repeat an episode format we used a few months ago called 5 USMNT Questions, 5 Leagues. This is where I ask my guests 5 questions about U.S. internationals from 5 different leagues around the world, and today all of those leagues will be from Europe. Joining me today is Larry Henry Jr. He's back on the show again. Larry is the managing editor and USMNT insider at SBI Soccer. He's also a writer for MLS and MLS Next Pro. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Frank. Good to connect with you again. Glad to be back, as always. Excited to break down some USMNT as we draw close to a busy summer. And glad to be back with you again, as always. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. And all the European seasons are winding down. And so today I wanted to talk about, 5 different storylines involving U.S. internationals, playing over there. And the first one's kind of a combo question between the Bundesliga and Premier League, because it's about, Gio Reyna. So you and I don't know if you watched it, but just not too long ago, Dortmund just qualified, for the Champions League final. Some other news recently was that Marco Reus was not going to be coming back to Dortmund next season. And so I'm wondering how this is going to impact, Gio Reyna, who's at Nottingham Forest now, just on this season-long loan. Do you think there's anything about this Marco Reus announcement that makes it more or less likely that Gio Reyna goes back to Dortmund and plays next season?
I definitely think it helps. I mean, Marco Reus, obviously club legend with Borussia Dortmund. Hopefully they can win the Champions League, a proper send-off for a player like that. And obviously I don't want to see Real Madrid or Bayern win it. But anyway, but I think this is a little bit of good news, right, for Gio Reyna, because obviously – struggled for playing time the first half of the season with Dortmund, was still able to get back into the men's national team and perform well over some of the windows, and then gets that loan move to Nottingham Forest, which, you, me, a lot of us thought that was going to be kind of his breakthrough moment in terms of getting back to playing regularly, getting some goals, getting some assists, getting some confidence, most importantly. And it's really been anything but that, right? He's only made 10 appearances for Forest, 230 minutes played, one assist. So really hasn't kind of kicked down the door or anything in the Premier League. And obviously Forest situation right now, trying to fight off relegation, might kind of put him a little bit, put him to the side a little bit more over some more experienced players. So it's been a tough loan for him. I think Marco Reus's move could open the door for Gio Reyna long-term return to Borussia Dortmund. Obviously, still has 2 years left on his contract there until 2026. So probably wants to get back playing, but prove himself and prove to the team that he wants to be there. He wants to be part of the organization. And I think the Reus move definitely opens up a big need, right, for a playmaker. Probably Dortmund's going to be, in the market this summer to try to fill that role, whether it's internally, whether it's in Europe. But I think that if Dortmund is set on keeping Gio Reyna part of the plans, this would probably, I would say, is his last chance to really prove that, unless they have other ideas or they're going to potentially try to sell him this summer to somewhere else, because there was other European teams in the mix for him in January, and it ended up being Forest who ended up kind of winning the loan sweepstakes. But yeah, I think this will be a good chance for Gio Reyna to get back and to prove himself to Dortmund and the fans.
I've interviewed a couple of reporters who follow, Dortmund over there, and both of them at one time told me that for a while Gio was seen as an eventual replacement for Reus, but I don't know if that's really the case anymore. It doesn't even seem like Reus is starting much. It seems like they have other young players that are getting more minutes, but than Gio before he left. I mean, do you think Gio would be favored to get a starting spot if he went back to Dortmund, or do you think he's just really still has his work cut out for him with Reus there or not?
Yeah, I still think he has his work cut out for him, right? Because obviously they know what he's about. They know the type of player he is. They know he's had kind of some injury issues in the past, which has hampered his time there. But when healthy, you know, he's shown that he's been able to, you know, pick up goals, pick up assists, play. He played a kind of a vital part in Dortmund almost winning the Bundesliga, you know, before. And but I just think too, right, like you said, there are a lot of young players in this squad, you know, Makoko and Adeyemi and Beno Gittens. I mean, there's a lot of young talent in this Dortmund squad. And not only the young talent too, but also some veteran players that obviously are important as well. So I think that if he does go back and if Dortmund does keep him for next season, he will have his work cut out for him. But I think, you know, most importantly for him right now, just end the season healthy, you know, end on a good note. And then obviously Copa America coming up with the national team, hopefully a good showing from him there on home soil in that tournament before he, you know, gets back underway with preseason camp in Germany.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, one thing we're not privy to is those conversations that will be taking place between, you know, Gio's camp and Dortmund. And I would think if they tell him, hey, look, you're going to have every chance to compete, you know, for one of these spots, that might be more likely for him to go. But if not, he may already be like, okay, I've had this season long loan at Forest, and while it didn't go perfectly, it was enough for me to say like I'm ready to move on, you know, from Dortmund. But you know, we'll have to see. Let's move on to Serie A, and I want to talk about AC Milan's game this past weekend, where Christian Pulisic played the number 10 spot, you know, for them in their 3-3 draw against Genoa. What do you think about Pulisic in that role? And I'm curious if you think he could ever play that role with the U.S. men's national team.
I think, you know, it's great to see, right? Obviously, Christian Pulisic getting back to his old way of, you know, scoring goals, getting assists, getting in on, you know, the action in the final third. He's just had a really good season with AC Milan, 13 goals, 9 assists, you know, closing in on 50 appearances in all competitions. I mean, that's awesome for him in terms of just staying healthy, being a part of the team, making an immediate impact. And we know Christian, right? He's versatile. He's played a bunch of different roles, whether it's the 10, whether it's left wing, whether it's right wing. You know, we've seen that in the past with Chelsea and with Dortmund. I thought it was really good to see him back at the number 10 role against Genoa, gets the assist on the Olivier Giroud, what we all thought was going to be the winning goal, but it ended up not being it. But I think it's a role we could see him back with the national team, right? You know, we've seen a lot of different players in that mix. Gio Reyna's been in the mix. Brendan Aaronson's been in the mix. Malik Tillman's been there. I just think the national team has so many guys that can kind of interchange, right? I mean, we've talked in the past about Gio Reyna could be, you know, used in a wing role, but could also be in the number 10. Brendan Aaronson's done that. Pulisic's done that. You know, if needed, I mean, Malik Tillman could do that as well. So it's all about kind of how Greg Berhalter wants to use, you know, get the most kind of attacking weapons on the field at the same time. You know, we've seen him a lot with the national team over the last few years and that kind of that left wing outside position. But I think that will free him up in terms of maybe not taking much of a beating at the number 10 role. That was, I think, kind of what we saw in the past as well. Him in the number 10, he, you know, in the CONCACAF games, right? He's getting hacked. He's getting fouled. He's drawing cards. But it does take a beating. So you want to preserve your best player. And so it'll be interesting to see. I think freeing him up in that number 10 role could be the U.S. MNT's best chance of making kind of a deep run in the Copa America and potentially winning it. But I also see the fact of, okay, let's keep him at that left wing. Maybe we put Gio Reyna at the 10. We saw what he did in the March window in the Nations League, Gio Reyna, you know, making an impact kind of in midfield. So, but those two guys could interchange and we could definitely see that. I could see that happening this summer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it seems like Reyna's spot if he's healthy and he's fit. But I haven't seen it in so long at U.S. men's national team level. It'd be interesting to see if they put him there, and maybe even if they did it with, if they needed some kind of spark, maybe late in the game to get a goal or something like that. But yeah, it was fun to watch him in that match, you know, this weekend.
And, you know, he's done that a few times this season where we've seen him in that attacking midfield role. I mean, mainly we've seen him on the wing, but there's a couple games, right? I think the Inter match a couple weeks ago, he was kind of in a midfield role. Earlier in April against Lecce, he scored a goal in that attacking midfield role. So I think it's going to be, it's been a great season for him. I'd like to see him, you know, keep it up during the last couple matches of the season. Obviously, Milan just kind of playing for pride at this point, try to see how high you can get into the Serie A table, because they've pretty much, you know, closing in on that top four. But yeah, I think we could definitely see that this summer at the number 10. I think the U.S. Could definitely use that creativity.
Okay, let's go to the Eredivisie, where, you know, PSV clinched the title this past weekend. We saw a lot of images of the U.S. internationals partying over there. And I want to ask you about Ricardo Pepi, though, because, you know, here's the guy that seemed to be for the longest time locked in as one of the top two strikers. And now with the resurgence of Haji Wright, now with Josh Sargent, you know, scoring goals. I mean, it really seems like he's kind of on the bubble of maybe being left out, you know, for the Copa America, because he's just not getting much playing time at PSV. They only have two matches left, so only two more matches for him to, like, make a difference. I mean, what is your thought, you know, about Ricardo Pepi? Do you think he has much of a chance of making this Copa America squad now?
I still think he does. Like you said, the resurgence of Haji Wright and Josh Sargent this season has been awesome to see. And then too, right, I don't expect Brandon Vasquez to be on the Copa America roster, but I think he definitely has warranted an opportunity just because of he's had a really good start to life in Mexico with Monterrey. But Ricardo Pepi obviously made the move to PSV, needed playing time. It kind of stinks for him, right, because he's behind Luke de Jong, who's a veteran. He's been around for a long time. He scored a lot of goals for PSV. He's done that again this season. So Pepe's mainly just been used off the bench. He's got 9 goals, but he's played less than 1,000 minutes this season, which is kind of worrying. So like you said, PSV clinching the title. They have 2 matches left. Maybe they give Pepe more of a chance over those last 2 matches. Just because at this point you're just playing for pride to end the season on a really strong note. But I think too, the one thing that Ricardo Pepi has going for him with the national team is he has that experience over Haji Wright and Josh Sargent in recent years. I mean, we've seen Ricardo Pepi over the last couple years, right? He's closing in on 30 caps with the national team. I mean, dating back to January of last year, he's got 7 goals with the national team in all competitions. So he's one of the more prominent scorers in the squad. So where I could see Greg Berhalter bringing him in is kind of a more familiarized option in the attack. I think that if you're going based off the production this season, which that'll definitely probably be in the conversation between the coaching staff. But I mean, Haji Wright, I don't see how you can exclude him. You know, he's closing in on 20 goals with Coventry, or finished less than 20 goals, but came close to it, got to an FA Cup semifinal, helped them in the top half of the season, you know, and then Josh Sargent still got playoffs coming up against Leeds United, you know, hopefully maybe get back to the Premier League. But I think Ricardo Pepi right now, odd man out. I think if you take the top 3 striking options right now for the national team, it's Fellerin, Balogun, Haji Wright, Josh Sargent, and then Ricardo Pepi is probably like that 3B right under Josh Sargent.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, and there's the Olympics. You know, a lot of people are talking about Pepi just being a better fit for the Olympics because of maybe where he is on the depth chart now and because he is age eligible. But yeah, that'll be a real interesting to watch. I hope Pepi gets at least one start. I mean, I'd like to see him get at least one start in these last 2 matches, you know, for PSV. You would think, you know, why not? But you know, I've been thinking that for a lot of weeks in the season with PSV. It just doesn't seem like they rotate much. And I mean, Luke DeJong starts every match, you know, even when they have multiple, you know, matches a week, and they seem to be playing a match that maybe isn't as critical, but we'll see. So keeping it, you know, you mentioned Josh Sargent there, and that's the league I want to talk about next, is the English Championship, which, you know, finished up last weekend. But I don't want to talk about Josh Sargent. I want to talk about Reggie Cannon at Queen's Park Rangers. He hardly played at all this season from what I could see, but in this last match, he went the full 90 minutes against Coventry City. The, you know, with Sergiño Dest's injury, you know, the U.S. has some question marks at right back. I mean, where do you see Reggie Cannon? Is he anywhere in the discussion at all for that position now?
I mean, obviously, Sergiño Dest's injury, I think, has opened the door for a lot of potential options at right back. I think Joe Scally is going to be the number one option in terms of, you know, youthful experience. He's had a really productive season in Germany. But then behind him, right, you know, Berhalter could go a lot of different ways. He could go with Brian Reynolds, who's been playing in Belgium. He could go with Reggie Cannon, a guy he's, you know, it's kind of a veteran, right, in this squad. He's featured a good amount during Berhalter's time as coach. Not that I don't think this will happen, but it is an option. DeAndre Yedlin, right? Veteran guy who's played a lot for the national team. You might want to have some veteran experience there behind Joe Scally. I think looking at Cannon's season, right, he makes the move. It was kind of an intriguing summer for him. We didn't really know where he was going to land. Ends up at QPR, kind of had to wait a little bit to get going, you know, made four straight appearances in October. Wasn't in the squad for a few games, and then really kind of picked it up the end of November, and then was in the squad for every match from the end of November to about Valentine's Day in February, and then was on the bench after that as QPR kind of struggled during that spell trying to get out of the relegation fight, and they did. They were able to stay up, and you know, it was really good to see Cannon get that 90 minutes against Coventry, going up against Haji Wright in that last game. And I was able to talk to Reggie when I was in England in January, you know, and I kind of asked him about the national team because he hasn't earned a U.S. cap since about 2022, right before the World Cup. He was in those pre-World Cup friendlies against Japan. And it was one of those things where he's just trying to do whatever he can to get back in the picture. And you know, he stayed in touch with Greg. He stayed in touch with the coaching staff. You know, I think, you know, multiple members of Berhalter's staff went to England to go see him during the fall schedule. So he's still on the radar. It's just about kind of what Berhalter wants to do at that right back position. Will he just go with youth, or will he kind of have that mixture of youth and veteran experience? And I still think, even with a healthy Sergiño Dest, I still think Reggie Cannon's a top five right back option in the pool. Because to me, right, you have Dest, you have Scally. I think Brian Reynolds is one that should be in the mix, and then Reggie Cannon as well. But again, it all really depends on what Berhalter wants to do. And like I had touched on, he really didn't play a lot from the middle of February to now in early May, except for those two appearances.
When you spoke with him, did he seem frustrated at all, either by, you know, playing time at Queen's Park Rangers or just lack of involvement with the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, so when I had talked to him, it was early January, so it was kind of the middle of that spell where he was playing week in, week out, and he was enjoying his playing time. He getting adjusted to a new coach because they had, you know, changed coaches in the season, but he enjoyed was enjoying the championship, enjoying the atmosphere of England, you know, that grueling kind of schedule, right, during the holidays, playing, you know, two matches, sometimes three matches in like a 7-day period. And, you know, to the national team, I don't think he was really too frustrated. I mean, he kind of understood it was a project that the national team has going, and he can really only control what he can control, and that's just playing his game, doing what he can to help QPR win and stay out of, you know, the relegation picture, which he was able to help with. But obviously, you know, there, you could tell kind of that conversation I had with him was, you know, that he wants to be back in the picture. He stayed in touch with the guys. He stayed in touch with the guys in the championship. You know, I know I asked him about if he had, you know, connected with Josh Sargent, Daryl DK, these guys in the championship. And he had, it was, you know, it obviously too, it's hard, right? Cause you're playing and you're, you know, sometimes one of your good friends might be 6 hours away, in the same country, but no, I think he was in good spirits and he knew as long as he controlled what he could control, then, he would, you know, maybe be back in the picture someday.
Okay. So let's go for our last, for our fifth question. Let's go to La Liga. And I want to talk about Luca de la Torre at Celta Vigo. And so I remember last season, Celta Vigo was fighting relegation all the way until the last match of the season. It looks to me like they're probably going to be safe. They're currently in 15th place, like 8 points clear of the relegation zone. But I'm wondering about Luca de la Torre's safety in this USM NT roster. He's a guy that was, I think, a mainstay. He's never played a lot of minutes. I mean, he started a few matches here and there, but he's a guy that was always on the roster. He had some injuries this year. He doesn't seem to be starting much for Celta Vigo anymore, while the U.S. M&T midfield seems to be getting more crowded. And I'm just curious, do you see De La Torre starting to fade out of the picture a little bit, or do you still think he has a pretty good stronghold on a roster spot?
I do see him fading out of the picture. I think the resurgence and production of a lot of the other midfielders in the pool have, you know, will definitely give Berhalter a lot to think about heading into Copa America. I mean, looking at the midfield options, right? I mean, you know, you have Weston McKennie, you have Yunus Musah, you have, you know, potentially Tyler Adams pending his status. So that's three guys right there. Then you can, you know, consider Gio Reyna, Malik Tillman, Brendan Aaronson, Johnny Cardoso, who's had a really good season with Real Betis. I mean, you know, there's seven right there. And, you know, we can only have 23 players on the roster for Copa America. And like you said, there's been kind of some injuries for De La Torre, some last couple matches of the end of March. He was out of the squad. And since then, he's mainly featured off the bench. It looks like Celta Vigo is going to be safe. Like you said, 8 points clear with four matches left. But you never know what could happen. But yeah, I think that right now he's probably the odd man out in terms of midfielders for the USMNT. And especially, you know, what way Berhalter goes, I think, you know, even other midfielders that, you know, could potentially be considered. Leonard Maloney, who made his debut last fall, I think he's had a really productive season in the Bundesliga. You know, it depends kind of what way you want to look at it. Kevin Paredes, who, you know, can be an outside midfielder, but, you know, we've seen him at fullback, you know. So I think De La Torre still has, you know, production in him and can get back to that. But, you know, maybe it's somewhere else and not Celta Vigo, not a team who's kind of fighting relegation each of the last two seasons. But we'll see what happens this summer. But I don't think we're going to see him in the roster. That's just my take. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe Berhalter goes with him just for, you know, maybe he brings a little something different than some of the other, you know, midfielders that might be on the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the names that you mentioned are they're either like mainstays with the team already, or they're players whose stock is kind of been rising these last, you know, 6-9 months. And De La Torre, well, I don't know if I can say his stock is necessarily falling. It's just kind of just been maintained at the same point for a couple of years now, and I just think these others have kind of passed him. So I agree with you. I don't think he'll be there unless maybe Tyler Adams can't play due to health, and then maybe that just bumps him up just that one spot, you know, he needs to get in. But yeah, he seems to be at risk, I think, of losing his roster spot. I agree with you there. Well, Larry, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll make sure and put links in the show notes to your X account, which is at LHenry019, and also to your work at SBI Soccer. But before I let you go, any final thoughts you'd like to share about Americans abroad, the USMNT, or anything at all?
No, thanks again, Frank, for having me. Always good to catch up with you, man, and excited for what's to come with the USMNT. In terms of writing, be on the lookout. Next few weeks, I'll have my Americans Abroad Best 11 over at SBI. A lot of tough decisions need to be made. I don't know who has the tougher decisions, me or Greg Berhalter, but it's fun. I always enjoy doing it. And a couple of the guys we've mentioned might be on that list. I think a couple locks that we talked about, but some guys may be on the bubble as well.
All right. I'm interested to see who you put in there at center back. Your two center backs in that lineup are. So I'll be on the lookout for that. Thanks again, Larry. And thanks to everyone for listening to Here and Abroad. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a fellow USMNT fan. I'm Frank Garza. You can follow me on X at Frank Garza 007. And I'll be back next week with a new episode.